is so special. And like I say, has brought me from someone who liked reading to somebody who reads every day and who is like a deep part of my inner life and now my social life as well. And I'm just...
Welcome to Keep It Fictional, a weekly podcast for book lovers by book lovers. Build your to-be-read list with Sadie, Liz, Virginia, Fiona, and Corrine from the Port Moody Public Library. Warning, this podcast contains strong opinions and may cause an increase in your library holds list.
So, welcome, book friends, to another episode of Keep It Fictional. Today, I am joined by my fellow book friends, Fiona. And today, I am also Fiona. In a way, today, we are all Fiona. Today, we gather on a very special episode to bid adieu to one of the OG book friends and founder of the Keep It Fictional podcast. Our resident CanCon champion is leaving Port Moody Public Library after 4 amazing years, leaving behind a legacy of hundreds of story times, hundreds of zooms to the moon, hundreds of baby bounces, pigeon costumes worn, book buddy interviews, craft bags stuffed, and of course, book recommendations on Keep It Fictional. When I told my mom the news, she said, "No." She was very sad as she has enjoyed your voice and your recommendations. Of course, not as much as Liz, but, you know, close second and the rest of us really rounding out the bottom of the barrel, which is fine. So in honor of Fiona, we have all chosen a Fiona book or a book to recommend to Fiona, or in some cases not recommend. But really, what is a Fiona book? In their own words, because we did a describe yourself in 5 words as a reader, which was very helpful. A Fiona book is emotional, earnest, own voice, educational, and quirky. Now, some of the other words that were gathered by Virginia in a, again, very helpful list to describe Fiona books, which I agree with, are historical. Fiona does enjoy a good historical fiction, which I think ties into that educational. Fiona likes to learn new things. Their brain is always moving and wanting to know more. Another descriptor is slow, or again, in their own words, nothing happens. So yeah, on that line of character versus plot, Fiona falls very hard into the character camp. People can just sit around leading their daily nun lives on an island, just contemplating birds for pages and pages and pages, and they drink that up like a hearty soup. Speaking of island living and ecclesiastical orders, they do have an interest in foraging. Hence all the mushrooms behind me, and nuns, specifically nuns, which is just very interesting. They are interested in queer YA, very specifically queer sports YA, which is a real narrow category. And yet you always manage to find all the best books in it. There's a little bit of science fiction and fantasy mixed in there, but as Virginia said in the email, very hard to pin down exactly what flavor we're talking about. Also, you are a lover and champion of graphic novels, specifically graphic novels with aesthetics. So it's very important to have the proper color palette and or schemes to really appeal and be a Fiona book. Extra bonus points if it's a biography or memoir. I do believe one of their first top books of the year when we did the podcast was Robin Ha's graphic novel, which is a nice, beautiful slice of life with strong aesthetics. So another thing that I really admire about Fiona is that their reading choices and reading habits have evolved. If you go back to the beginning of the podcast, it's a lot of graphic novels, and their reading taste has really expanded and evolved over the last course of years. They are now a professional reviewer. They are an audiobook aficionado slash champion. So if you ever need an audiobook recommendation, Fiona is the person to talk to. And yeah, they're a bit hard to pin down in terms of what exactly they're reading because it's always something just a little bit unexpected. You never know what Fiona is going to bring to the table, but you can absolutely ensure that it will have good writing, strong characters, and people staring out of windows in contemplation. The very first book recommended by Fiona on this podcast was Super Mutant Magic Academy by Jill Tamaki, which I feel like is a good encapsulation of Fiona's also sly sense of humor. So after 148 episodes of this podcast, which began in the pandemic and has continued onwards, we have gotten to know Fiona as a reader. So we have all taken the challenge, is the word I'm going to use, the challenge to read a Fiona book and recommend it back to Fiona. So why don't we start with Liz Fiona, who was also an OG book friend. So Fiona Liz, what book do you recommend?
Well, glad to be back, Fiona, for your very special episode. Now, this particular book, I feel, is really a Fiona book. It starts with a sojourn to a conservatory every week for 7 weeks, despite the frigid Toronto winter. A woman was mourning the death of her father, attempting to work through her grief and to alleviate this unshakable chill in her bones that set in with his passing. And she would go to the conservatory to soak in the warmth of those weak rays that were captured within the greenhouse glass while processing her thoughts. It's within grief that an urgency to know more can emerge, and this happened with this person. And whether it was looking toward the future or, in her case, looking towards the past, she had this strong desire to know more. She wanted to know more about her family's history on her father's side before it was forever lost. Now, it was this curiosity about her father, to learn more about his side of the family tree, that led her to find out that he wasn't actually her father after all, at least not in the biological sense. And this is how unearthing by the Canadian essayist, novelist, and children author, Kiel McClure, begins. Now, the man that McClure knew as her father was an Englishman and a foreign correspondent for the CBC who was away from home for long periods of time. And McClure's mother was an artist and the proverbial nail that stuck out in her birthplace of Japan. She didn't quite fit in with the citizenship that she ended up renouncing, and yet she always had outsider status wherever else she lived, too. As McClure attempts to learn the identity of her biological father, she struggles with whether her desire for knowledge should end at some point. Where does she stop? When does she stop looking? Does she really want to know more and change her entire family history as she knows it? It doesn't help that her mother is evasive with information. She's unforthcoming. She doesn't want to answer questions. And when she does, she provides contradictory information. So intertwined throughout McClure's story, as if taking root and grounding both her and her mother, her memories of gardens and time in nature, which is healing in the wilderness and resilience. In a series of short chapters and vignettes, McClure's memoir is contemplative and emotional, you know, word. But it is not her story alone. It's also a biography of her parents. It's a love story. It's a story about family secrets, a story about identity and belonging, a story of the struggle for connection between immigrant mother and mixed-race daughter. As McClure so poignantly says, what is a heart but a broken masterwork pieced together from desire, envy, regret, nostalgia, pity, tenderness, and hope? What is a heart but a way of muscling your way onward? What is a heart but a fist? So Fiona and anyone else who enjoys biography and memoir, Canadian authors, stories with secrets that we delve into and attempt to unfold. If you want something that will make you think without preaching to you, if you want something that you can relate to if you've ever lost somebody you loved, then you may want to pick up Unearthing by Kiel McClure.
Thank you so much, Liz. I will absolutely be picking that up. And I'm very excited about this episode because probably my very favorite thing about Keep It Fictional is that every episode I get new books to put on my to-read list. And if we've done almost 150 episodes, then I probably have 150 times 5 books on my TBR from this podcast. So yeah, that sounds exactly like my kind of book, Liz. I think you totally nailed it. And I think you've always had a good idea of what I like, because I always remember you recommending to me
A Tale for the Time Being.
That's it. Yes. Thank you. Because I think that shot up to my like top 10 favorite books of all time. So very excited about putting Unearthing on my to-read list. Thanks, Liz.
All right. So we have one in the win column. So we are going to switch over to someone who, they both love a strong protagonist. So I'm going to swing it over to Fiona Sadie to see what book you have chosen.
Right. So the book that I've chosen was actually one that Fiona had on their most anticipated list. So when we did our May to August list, this book appeared on that list. And it is actually not going to come out until the end of August. So it is still yet to be released. But I managed to get an arc of this one. So this book is The Vampires of El Norte by Isabel Cañes. And it's a historical book, so it definitely fills the historical love. It takes place in southern Texas, starts in 1837, and it follows Nestor and Nina. And Nestor and Nina have been inseparable ever since Nestor arrived on Nina's father's land years ago after his family was killed by Yankee soldiers. And him and his uncle and his cousin and his grandmother were able to escape. And they came and they started working on Nina's father's ranch. And Nina's father is a very large ranch owner, very well off. Nina is kind of this well-off young woman, knowing that at this time she will one day be kind of married off to someone to secure trade agreements and alliances and all, and kind of everything that comes with that. But at this point, Nina is 13. And Nina doesn't care about all of that, because Nina and Nestor are in love. And Nina and Nestor are inseparable. And one night, they had heard a story that there was some treasure that had been buried. And Nestor believes that he knows exactly where that treasure is. So one night, they sneak out of their houses and they sneak over into the field and they start to dig for this treasure. But before they're able to dig too much, something emerges from the darkness, something that Nina has never seen before. It's large. It almost looks like an animal, but almost looks like a human. It is completely hairless. Its body is gray. It has claws, and it has a mouth full of terrifying fangs. And before she knows what's happening, this creature attacks her. Nestor, hearing her scream, turns around to see this creature on top of his beloved and is attacking her, and manages to scare it away, manages to kill it somehow. It dissolves into dust. And when he finally looks back to Nina, she is covered in blood, and he's pretty sure that she's dead. So he runs back to the house, carrying Nina in his arms, into her father's home. He drops her on the floor and tells them that they need to do something. But then her mother looks at her and she says, "My daughter is dead. My daughter is dead." Over and over again, "My daughter is dead." Nina's father turns, pointing a finger at Nestor accusingly, and says, "Boy, come here." Nestor knows that if Nina is dead, he will be blamed. So he runs. He runs and he runs and he runs. And he does not stop running. For 9 years, he continues running, knowing that he can never, ever go back. Because if he goes back, he will immediately be blamed for the death of the ranch owner's daughter. One day, Nestor receives a letter from Nina's older brother, asking him to please return to the ranch. The American soldiers are invading Mexico, and they need every spare hand that they can get. And Nestor needs to return as a favor to him, as a favor to Nestor's uncle, who will go fight if Nestor does not come back, and as a favor to Nestor's grandmother. So Nestor agrees, bracing himself for what is to come when he steps onto the ranch and is accused once again of killing his daughter. But when he comes back, what he does not expect to see is Nina, alive and well, and 9 years older. What he especially does not expect to see is a raging Nina, who is so mad at him for leaving, for abandoning her, and never sending a single word that she does not ever want to see him. She does not ever want to talk to him. Nestor knows that he has to try. Nestor knows that if he just tells her the truth, if he tells her that he believed that she was dead, then maybe she'll understand why he left. And Nestor is given this opportunity when both of them go and accompany her father and other men from the ranch to go and fight the American soldiers. Nina has convinced her father that she should join the group as a healer to help out in the battle as well as on the road to the war. And her father has reluctantly, but with her older brother's support, has agreed with the promise that when they return, Nina will marry whoever her father tells her to. Now, Nina's plan is on the road to convince her father that she has more value to the ranch, not as the wife of somebody, but as a healer in her own right, taking over from Nestor's grandmother, who is the current healer on the ranch. And so Nina plans to go off and prove her worth. And Nestor plans to try and convince Nina that the reason that he left was justifiable. And there was a reason. There was a good reason for it. And maybe she will talk to him. And maybe she will love him again. So as they're on the road, they come across a desiccated body of a cow. And this isn't some cow that has been wandering through the desert for months and months and hasn't been able to find food. It's one of the cows that they brought with them on this journey. And it looks like it has been completely drained of blood. When Nina sees this, the scar where the creature bit her starts to tingle. When Nestor sees this, he knows exactly what did this. But they have no choice but to continue on to the battle. During the battle, they're separated and then brought back together as the Yankee soldiers take over and the Mexican soldiers lose the fight. And Nina and Nestor are thrown together on a journey to make it back to her father's ranch to protect her family from these creatures that only Nina and Nestor have ever seen and that they know are going to try and find the rest of her family and killed them. So this is a Western. Nestor is a vaqueros, which is Spanish term for a cowboy. There's a lot of history in it surrounding the battle between the United States and Mexico for kind of Southern Texas at that time. There's a bit of romance in it. There's a lot of vampire in it, or there's some vampire in it, maybe not a lot, but some vampire in it. But yeah, I really, really enjoyed this book, actually. I know that, Fiona, yours and my tastes do sometimes align. And I think that kind of on the YA side of things, or when you do read some more fantasy or science fiction, we do sometimes cross over. I know you have read the Ninth House book, which we both really liked, by Leigh Bardugo. So I do know that our tastes do sometimes align. So I think that this was one of those books that there were kind of enough elements that both of us really could enjoy that I think that it was a good match. I don't think that you have read it yet. I did double check that. I'm fairly certain you have not read it yet. So I would recommend it. I think that, yeah, it's a really kind of atmospheric book. It kind of creates that scene of historical time in that place. You kind of get the emotions in it. There's a lot of high emotions. And yeah, so I think that it would be a very good Fiona book. And I would highly recommend Vampires of El Norte by Isabel Cañas.
Thank you, Sadie. I am so excited for that book. And I'm like also a little bit afraid that it's going to be like deep. It was going to be deeply disappointing for me. So it's nice to, because I'm so excited, it's nice to hear a recommendation. Like, we both definitely cross paths on the historical, but I know when it comes to like magical elements you like a lot and I like a little. So I'm interested to see where this falls. Like, I'm, you know, vampires I like because they can be understated, of like sort of waiting to see, like, is it who is the vampire? Are they really there or is it a trick of the mind? Sounds like they're really there. but, you know, we've got that is now going to be one of them. Nina. And I'm definitely having a Western moment right now. Like, in the past, I've gotten a little bit into them more in film and television. And I've been a little bit disappointed at the diversity in film and television. Like, I kind of have gone through it and there's nothing left. And now it's like, oh, books. Books is going to hold me through on this. So you've definitely hit the nail on the head of like where my future reading, I think, for the next year is going to be like strongly in Western. So thank you so much, Sadie. And I will definitely be texting when I'm finished to like talk to you about it.
Awesome. All right. So sometimes we recommend books wholeheartedly. And sometimes we leave our reading until Thursday night and we commit to a book that maybe doesn't hit all of the criteria. But in my defense, I would argue this is a very Fiona book. Because all the things that I hated about it, I think you would really enjoy. Because I did spend a fair amount of it going, when is something going to happen? Anything, just anything. And then something happened and I was like, why wasn't the entire book about that? Where was that the entire book? So I feel like you're really going to enjoy this one. So I went what I thought was CanCon, but then quickly realized the author is not Canadian. I thought it was one of those like honorary Canadians that they lived in Toronto for like 6 months. And so we're like, oh, they're Canadian. But no, they've always lived in the United States and they've always been very American. So there you are. That was a failure on that front. However, this has a strong bit about plants and foraging and a 19th century American female scientist, self-taught, bucking the trends, who has been buried by history and whose legacy is only now being uncovered, and also has a weird religious bent to it, I think you would also enjoy. And again, people just spend so much time sitting and thinking, just relentlessly thinking. So I chose a book that was actually recommended to me by a patron who I don't forget and I don't forgive, and who recommended Barbara Kingsolver's kind of newer book, Unsheltered. Barbara Kingsolver is probably the most famous for the Poisonwood Bible, which, Fiona, I don't know if you have read. No. Okay, cool. Then I'm really doing well. So I think that she is very famous for kind of feminist writing and environmentalist writing and fiction, and again, some weird religious stuff in here. So this is like very much firing on all Barbara Kingsolver cylinders at once. It is a split narrative, which I know some people on this panel really enjoy, of you get the story that's set in the past and then you get the story that's set in the present, and how will they intertwine? Mm-hmm. All right. So the story set in the present focuses around the question, how can you do everything right and still end up destitute? Both of these stories feature a house that is falling apart. Literally, Will and Knox's house is falling apart. It is built on no foundation whatsoever. The lean-to on a side addition doesn't actually have any load-bearing walls. And so when she asks the contractor to come and visit this house that she and her husband have inherited in Vineland, the contractor says, well, there's really nothing to be done except for knock it down and try again. This is not the news that she really wanted to hear. They have just moved to this town after her husband, after finally working so hard for his entire life to get tenure at the college shuts down. Willa, who is a journalist by trade, has worked very hard raising two adult children, pursuing her passion and her writing, and an award-winning magazine that folds. Now, both in their 50s, their lives are nothing like what they thought it would be. They did everything that they were supposed to do, get the education, have the children, work hard for tenure, and yet at the end of the day, they are left with nothing. Until their hands are full with a baby. One of their adult children, Zeke, who is a hedge fund manager, as far as I could understand. There were some financial terms that my eyes glazed over and I could not catch up. His wife, after the birth of their son, has committed suicide. Zeke, unable or unwilling to take on the responsibility, hands the child over to Willa, her husband, and their other adult daughter, who has recently returned from Cuba, aimless, to raise this child. In this same small city in New Jersey, in the 19th century, a man is grappling with the question, how can a man tell the truth and be reviled for it? The past of Vineland is storied. It was supposed to be a promised land, at least according to the founder slash, I'm going to call it cult leader, Landis, who brought people to this promised land of farming and equality and education for all. So long as you did exactly what he said, everything would be fine. He would teach the people how to farm. They would get a piece of land in return for farming it and giving him a lot of the profits. And as long as they did not touch a drop of alcohol or think for themselves or speak for themselves. Now, Thatcher Greenwood has recently moved into a house that was built in Vineland by his father-in-law, who has passed away. They have been brought back from the bustling town of Boston where he grew up, the town where he worked as a medical assistant in the Civil War, back to this small town where his wife's family grew up under the watchful eye of Landis, the Emperor King, and has been told that their house is slowly ripping itself in half. Built by contractors who believed more in the rule of God than the rule of rulers, it was built with whimsy and as a result is literally cracking in half. Thatcher Greenwood is a teacher. He has been hired to teach at the local high school where, again, free education is available to all, including women. However, he is closely observed by his employer to make sure that he doesn't say anything out of line, which is a problem for Thatcher because he is a scientist. He can only look at the facts. And the facts and the evidence are telling him that the theories of Charles Darwin are correct, that they are real and irrefutable. But of course, this goes against the word of the Emperor God, Landis. Next door to their falling apart home is a curious woman that Thatcher first spies through the window, lying on the ground in her yard, observing ants. Just rolling around in that dirt in her petticoat, getting real up close and personal with the ants. And at first, Thatcher thinks the same that all the other neighbors think. This woman is insane. And she has been left by her very sensible husband to join the free love movement in another cult city across the way. She is abandoned, she is strange, she is odd. But as Thatcher gets to know his neighbor, he realizes that she is extraordinary. Mary Treat was a 19th century self-taught biologist. She observed Venus flytraps and creepy ants and a lot of weird stuff about spiders. She wrote for Harper's Bazaar and actually sustained herself and her entire career through her writing about nature. What's more, she too is a scientist, and she corresponds, a very heavy correspondence, with the great man himself. She's friends with Charles Darwin. In fact, she is in correspondence with almost every notable scientist of this age through her sheer will and intelligence. But as he gets to know Mary Treat a little bit more, the crack is not only in the foundations of his house, but the crack is in his marriage and in the community as the ideas or his truth start to tear the town apart. So this is Barbara Kingsolver's Unsheltered, which brings the two houses that are falling apart in different times, drawing parallels, drawing difference, each one thinking that they are living in apocalyptic times only to look back and realize how good it was, or how difficult it was. Why I think this is a Fiona book is reading it, I actually thought it would make a good audiobook, which is not something that I often think. And I think that most of my antagonism towards this book is that it's a lot of contemplation. And also there is a line where Willa in the present is talking about how, you know, the house is falling apart and she doesn't have money to fix it. And that's really sad. And her daughter is like, but mom, the ice caps are melting. And I wanted to throw her out the window. I have never hated someone so much who is supposed to be like the mouthpiece of my generation as much as I hated Antigone. I wanted her gone. I get it. The ice caps are melting, but also sometimes you need somewhere to sleep where the roof isn't caving in. Is that so much to ask? Is that so big? You too are a consumer, Tig. We are all consumers. It's fine. Anyways, so hopefully, even though this book was definitely not for me, but I could appreciate it because the writing was really good. Even though I was quite angry, I kept reading. I think that this might be up your alley, maybe as an audiobook.
Thank you, Corinne. Yeah, that definitely sounds like a bingo card win. Like there's so much in there that I think I will appreciate. And I often find that when you like, it's clear you're not recommending something for yourself, which, you know, happens a lot on this podcast, but you do always give the like, you know, but to each book their reader. And I think I am often that reader. I am always putting down the ones that you're like, oh, I hated that. And as you're explaining it, I'm like, oh, that sounds so good. I love preachy books. I love like meandering books where we hear people's inner thoughts. Yeah. And so that sounds exactly like the like, Green hates it, pass it on to me kind of book that often comes up in this podcast. Thank you, Green.
You're welcome to every book their reader, to every book their reader. And actually, I had thought of my existential question that I'm actually going to pose to Fiona, but I'm going to let you think about it a little bit in that I would like you to recommend a Fiona book to each of us. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I'm going to let you stew on that, and maybe we'll get to that at the end, just for some added pressure. It's your last day. It's your last day. So it'll be fine. All right, so we have had three very, very Fiona books, and so I'm going to pass it over to Fiona Al, who is our newest book friend. However, thankfully, their question of what is a Fiona book led to that very helpful list that Fiona compiled. So I'm curious, given those criteria, what you came up with, Fiona Al.
All right. So I actually picked a book that was on Fiona's top 10 list. So I know this is a book that Fiona has already read and enjoyed. This book is ostensibly for children, and it opens with a few lines from Aeschylus's Agamemnon, with Cassandra beginning to prophesy the doom of Troy. Before moving into the story itself, we open on an idyllic field, quiet and calm, with rabbits grazing here and there, and you might be able to figure out what book this is just from that. Hazel, a young rabbit, and his brother Fiver are in search of a rare treat, cowslip. When they manage to find one, some bigger rabbits from the Ausla, which is basically the rabbit's militia, claim it for their own, and Fiver and Hazel move across the stream to search for more food. It's here that they come across a sign, a literal sign. The humans have raised some sort of sign over the field, and Fiver gets a bad feeling, capital B, capital F. The field seems to be covered with blood in his vision, though Hazel reassures him it's only the light of the setting sun. But Fiver's bad feeling continues to grow, and Hazel finally agrees to go to the leader of the Warren and ask him to evacuate all the rabbits on Fiver's behalf. But the leader of the Warren, the Threera, doesn't believe them. So Hazel and Fiver gather a few other rabbits, including Bigwig, Dandelion, Blackberry, Pipkin, and some others. And with Hazel as their unlikely leader, this group of rabbits heads out to try and find a new and safe place to live. They find a variety of new places on their journey, but Fiver's capacity for telling of danger often comes up and warns the rabbits that maybe this isn't where they need to be. Finally, they find the perfect place, and that place is the title of this book, Watership Down by Richard Adams. But the adventure doesn't stop here, because to start a new warren, they'll need more than just the male rabbits they left with. Watership Down is a wonderful, strange book that's often given to children, but has a literary and almost mythic scope that feels appropriate for adults as well. I think this is a book that I read fairly young and maybe shouldn't have. It's very adult in many ways, and I read it again as an adult and absolutely loved it. It's beautifully written. Each chapter opens with an epigraph that gives a little idea of what's in store for our heroic rabbits, and I'm a sucker for an epigraph. I'll admit I cried at the end of this book, but in a good way, a way that feels properly earned. And so it gets the fabled 5 out of 5 stars from me. One of my favorite elements of this book is the inclusion of rabbit language, words and phrases here and there that are in a creative language of the rabbits. Words like Elil for enemies, Flay for food, Frith for the sun and their god. We also learn about rabbit folklore and the prince with 1,000 enemies who outwits those enemies with his superior guile and is a hero to all rabbits. This is a rich text, and I recommend it to just about anyone, honestly. Don't be fooled by the fact that it's about rabbits. It's a fascinating story about courage, friendship, leadership, and community. It's an epic adventure story, and it's full of beautiful prose, and I can completely see why it's on Fiona's top 10 list.
Thank you so much, Al. Yes, that is one that I read in high school, and I think it was, like, I didn't read a lot as a kid or as a teen, and so it was probably my first experience of like a book that was like dealing with such serious things and this beautiful writing. And it was just like blew my mind. It's definitely one that I want to go back to because I did read it like such a long time ago. Yeah. And it's nice to hear that it's just like still worth it and still good. And I think it, you know, it's so sad, but I always can handle a sadness if there's like a greater purpose, you know, and you're like, and you cry, but you're like, but it was all worth it, or they were so, you know, valiant. Yeah, I think I'm a sucker for that. So thanks for bringing that back up.
I'm glad, Fiona Al, that you cried at Watership Down, because I also ugly cried. Also, the animated movie is traumatizing to watch as a child, like, traumatizing.
I never read the book because I saw the animated movie, and ever since then it has just been horribly tainted in my mind as the most terrifying thing in the entire world.
Yeah, like forget Little Nemo and Slumberland, like that's the real, there was like a, someone made like a picture book of like stills from the movie. And I still remember Bigwig's like eye glazed over with like the big scar, like biting into another rabbit's neck. Like, yeah, formative. Anyways, on that note, going to our resident blood and gore expert, we are going to turn it over to someone who sometimes has some things in common with Fiona and sometimes not. We're going to hand it over to Fiona Virginia.
All right. I think as Corinne pointed out earlier, Fiona, you do have a wide-ranging reading taste. Sometimes books that you talk about, I'm like, I want nothing to do with them. But then there's also the fact that out of all the book friends, maybe this is surprising to you, I'm pretty sure I've read more Fiona choices than anyone else. Because I think you and I really have books that we're often on both of our radars. And so when you talk about them, they immediately go up to the top of my TBR because, you know, like you made them sound so interesting. So yeah, so I'm pretty sure I read more Fiona books than others. And you pointed out earlier too, like what we're going to really going to miss is I'm going to have to find another somewhere else for positive reinforcement, because it is such an accomplishment every time one of the books that we talk about made it onto your reading list that we see on your story graph or your Goodreads. I'm like, yes, we did it. And often you're the only person that I'm like, you know, there's a mild chance that maybe Fiona would care about this book. So please keep us posted on what you're reading. It's not going to be quite the same without you talking about the book, being the person who have the privilege to edit the podcast. You have so many lines of gold that I can use as a teasers all the time. I don't know what where I'm going to find them now, because it's really hard to be like, okay, we use Fiona like 5 times already. Maybe someone else should get a chance. But the things that you say are just so perfect for the teasers. But anyway, so keep us posted. So the book that I choose for you today, I think it touches on a lot of the themes that are often in your books. This is a book about queerness, about, I think, body, maybe body image or body acceptance, I think would be a word, so content warning for eating disorders in this one. It is definitely quirky, which is one of your five words, as Corinne said, and it is under 300 pages, which is also, I think, a thing for you. And then, as I said before, I do believe in Fiona. Somewhere, there is a teeny tiny banana that is wearing some fancy pants. The books that you have talked about, Murder Crabs, Sentient Trains, Turnip Babies, I all got from you. So I feel like I should feed that banana a little bit today so that you don't forget that it is there. So really, I find this book because I was looking for books for the last episode, which is for a book for a TV show, which is Yellow Jackets. And it shows up on a LGBTQ list for Yellow Jacket fans. And I read it, I loved it, but I'm like, this is not really Yellow Jackets. So don't worry. Despite the title of the book and despite how I find this book, the C word does not appear in this book. So don't worry about it. But I was just like reading this. I'm like,
you may want to specify what C word you're talking about.
Cannibalism. Don't know what you're thinking of. Our listeners know us very well. So it's going to be cannibalism. All right. On that note, I just felt like as I was reading it, I'm like, this is not Yellow Jackets, but this feels like it could be a Fiona book. And I think it's something that you might enjoy. So the book that I have for you today is Margaret and the Mystery of the Missing Body by Megan Mills. I don't know how you feel about this cover. I think it's like super appropriate for the book. I love it. Anyway, so adolescence, we all go through it, some of us again and again. It's the private heat within which our goop becomes what it wants to become. It's the mystery of the banana, the magic converting its peel from pale green to a brash and confident yellow. Adolescence is the hallway, the between, the almost, the not there yet. Margaret is a teenager dealing with all the changes, all the drama that comes along with this stage of her life. Everything is different. People expect different things from you. People expect you to grow up, whatever that means. And while you're trying to figure out, like, what's happening? Who are you? What are you? So many questions. And some days, Margaret feels like she has all the friends in the world. Some days, she feels all alone. And on many days, she longs for those good old days of the GCSA Club, a club that she created in middle school. GCSA stands for Girls Can Solve Anything. It is a club with her three best friends, Angie and Gina, and then later on joined in by Gretchen, a new girl that dazzles everyone in her talent show performance, where she dressed up as a detective and then was murdered and transformed into a femme fatale. It is like supposed to be some feminist cinema critique or something, but everybody was just so excited. And they were delighted to find out that Gretchen also loves solving mysteries, so she was invited to join the group right away. Gretchen, somebody who Margaret doesn't quite know how to act around because she feels something different for her. Not like Angie and Gina, her other best friends, but something not quite the same. Now, the GCSA is the neighborhood's crime-busting, mystery-solving club. As of today, they have solved more than 40, almost 50 cases. There's like, you know, cases of lost pets and missing toddlers, but there are also other more interesting cases, such as GCSA case 27, Gina and the case of the ghostly gallop, or number 23, Angie and the case of the furless ferret. And of course, who could forget the case of the stolen specimens, where a bunch of rare butterflies have disappeared from the botanical garden. And when they tracked down where the butterflies have gone, they found out they were at their science teacher house. And when they saw the science teacher, she was in a kind of like a half-human, half-bug form because she has somehow got the DNA from the butterflies and is trying to transform herself. There's also, of course, the case of the missing body. One day, there was a bit of a lull in the detective club when they heard a knock on the door. And when they opened the door, there was nobody there. Then there's a little voice that speaks up from, "Hello, here, down below, look down here." And when they looked down, there was a brain that just shows up named Frida Normandy. And Frida Normandy told them that she woke up this morning without her body, and she's hoping that the GCSA Club could help her find her body back. Oh, Margaret has such fun in this club, but unfortunately, now that they are in high school, Her friends have moved on to boys, to clothes, to makeup. But Margaret just wants to continue to be a detective. But she's being pushed also to move on. Right now, she has just finished her Wendy's Frosty and stuffing it in that paper bag along with all the burger wrappings that she has. This is the last time, she said, I'm not going to get Wendy's anymore. She got these pounds to lose, food to get out of her system before she can make a move on her crush. Now, this may seem like a pretty common, common is not wrong, but it seems like a coming of age story, I guess. But of course, it is nothing but, because to start with, the author Megan Mills plays so well with the format and the different perspectives. You know, there's third person narration to start with, and then you get the chapters of the girls can solve anything cases that are in sort of like a Babysitter's Club-esque kind of format, which, by the way, Megan Mills also wrote a book about Babysitter's Club. So there's that. Then it turns into sort of like a second person perspective, you know, using the you to address the reader. Then there's also these really heartfelt letters from Margaret to her old friends, to her new friends, and to other people in her family to explore so those relationships. And then there's also this weird, surreal journey. It almost feels like a platform game that you have like levels that you have to go through, where Margaret and others went through this journey of the body, shall we say. The writing is so creative. It is so good. Every sentence is gold, and it's all about Margaret and her discovery of who she is. And of course, throughout the book, Fiona, there's so many pauses where she just thinks. You hear what she's like thinking about, what she's musing about. So, you know, like there's a lot of that also in it, but all very, very like, just like when you read it, you just, oh, I'm going to take a pause and think about what she's thinking. And in addition to like people turning into bugs and, you know, there's talking brains, there's also a lot of other weirdness in it. Like I said, lots of body related stuff. So be prepared to get acquainted with the body. And this is a darkly like kind of funny book, which I think, like Corinne said, you know, so every now and then, you know, Fiona has this light humor that shows up in her reading choices also. But it also deals with some really important subject matters, exploring identity, of queerness, of transness, of the body. What makes up your body? What defines it? What does it mean when somebody say that you are this or you are that? And how we constantly try to change our body to fit us. And in some ways, sort of like adolescence, right? Like and identity exploration, it feels very much like you're stuck in a hallway also. You know, sometimes you think you've reached the end, but you have to go back and you have to redo it, because we grow and we change and we're never quite done. And this is explored so successfully in this wonderfully weird story. And it really challenges our common notions about what it means to have an identity, to have a body. And of course, I don't know how you feel about this, but like what really cements this for me is that it starts with a whole bit on Fiona Apple and the genius of her album title. And again, don't know how you feel about Fiona Apple, but I just realized that you have the same name. And speaking of names, Sadie, this is also the book that has Sadie and Evie in the same book, which is also very weird. But anyway, I love this book and I hope you will too. So that is Margaret and the Mystery of the Missing Body by Megan Mills. And because this is like Fiona's special week, you know, I'm, as Liz said, like an overachiever. I actually did try to make it a whole Fiona week. I listened to an audiobook because you're a champion of audiobooks. So I did that. I started this family story about mushrooms just for you. It was about like this mother-in-law who comes in to live with it's a family story. It's a mother-in-law coming to live with the family, and the daughter-in-law is like, I don't really know this mother-in-law very well, but you know, she needs taken care of. So she's here. Her husband is never home, but they kind of bonded over these mysterious mushrooms that show up in their house. So that might be something that you enjoy. That's Ghost Music by Anne Yu. And because I know that Sadie was going to talk about a book with vampires, I didn't do this one, but there's another book that I think you will enjoy. This is The Root of Ice and Salt. It is by Jose Luis Sarate and translated by David Boles, and it is a queer retelling of some of the bits in Dracula, and it is published by a Sofia Moreno Garcia's imprint right in Vancouver. So I think that you really enjoyed it. I have never felt so much like I'm in the middle of the ocean with all the like sights and the smells and the sounds. Does this specifically sort of address that journey when some mysterious boxes show up on the ship, and it's from the captain's point of view? It's very sexually explicit and kind of almost erotic. So if you are ready for something like that, I would suggest checking this out, Root of Ice and Salt. So there we are. So thank you again, Fiona, for all the books that you have recommended us. I can't wait to see what you read next.
Thank you so much, Virginia. I now have not one, but three books on my TBR from Virginia. And I almost feel like the Margaret and the Case of the Missing Body, I feel like almost there's something for everybody on the panel for that. I feel like everyone should read it. And I like that it sounds like a bit of a critique of the like cozy mystery, especially like children sleuths, because, well, I actually have a soft spot for that stuff. My mind is always going, that's not realistic. That doesn't make sense. Like, this kid's going to be so messed up. Like, and so I like things that are a little bit more like, you know, looking into that. And with Virginia, it's always a question of whether like it's going to push my boundaries, but is it going to push them too much or be right on? So we'll see with this book. Oh, and I also wanted to address my saying things that are always good for the teaser, because I think I'm the one who doesn't script anything, which is a choice, which, you know, I may live to regret if I ever run for politics. You know, the infamous Nun episode, where I will never go back and listen to that episode because I'm sure I said a lot of incriminating things. Yeah, so this is, you know, a time capsule of the random things that come out of my mouth, and I'm glad that they've been used for some good to the teasers. So thank you, Virginia, for putting them to use. Shall I answer your question now? All right. Okay, so this is done quickly. And also, recognizing that I've really come into my own as a reader in this podcast. So I think pretty much everything I recommend is going to be something I talked about on this podcast, because it has brought me from like a casual reader through my stage of identity, here I am, tongue-tied for the last time. Imposter syndrome, going through imposter syndrome to now feeling like, yes, I'm a real reader. I have like real things to recommend. But yes, a lot of these things will be things that I have already talked about on the podcast. Okay, for Corinne, I have Iron Widow by Xian J. Zhao. I feel like on one hand, this has all sorts of things that you really hate. It is a YA mecha with a love triangle. It's very out there. But the thing is that the main character is one of those like kill everything types. And I feel like sometimes that just works for you in a way that you can forgive everything else, because there is someone who is like the bad guy centralized as like a main character. So I think that could go for you. And I'm glad to see a thumbs up, because I do often wonder what really is a Korean book. For Al, I have An Unkindness of Ghosts by Rivers Solomon. If you haven't read it yet, or other things by Rivers Solomon, this is sci-fi, space opera-y. It takes a character in a space opera-y setting. And it's very queer. It follows a non-binary character. I think they're neurodivergent, and just a really great, interesting, kind of uncommon character. I haven't seen a lot of main characters like them. So yeah, I feel like, again, if you haven't already read it, that'd be up your alley. Okay, for Liz, I have a real like one I pulled out of my way back list. And I think it's probably dated by now. So, you know, it may be something more like this than this actual book. But it is I'll Seize the Day Tomorrow by Jonathan Goldstein. And if I'm not seeing any like neurons firing for Jonathan Goldstein, he is at the very least like the type of person that you would appreciate. I think that sometimes we have overlap with CanCon. I feel like Liz is very like in the know for CBC reporters and CBC authors. whenever I bring someone up, she's like, oh yeah. This is a memoir with a lot of humor to it. Jonathan Goldstein did a CBC podcast maybe before there were podcasts called Wiretap, and it's just a bunch of like weird skits, and they just like would just make me laugh so hard. And he has a very specific view on life of a lost out in the world sort of analytical what is life with humor. So that is my recommendation for Liz, with the caveat that I think it's about him turning 30, and it was probably written like 10 or 15 years ago. So I don't know if it's still good, but I loved it in university. for Sadie. This might also be one that Sadie has read. We've talked about the overlap that we have in YA, but I feel like Sadie is fantasy YA and I'm contemporary YA. I think where we have some crossover is probably on thriller YA. So I would recommend One of Us is Lying by Karen McManus. It is, you know, a quintessential YA read. I think it really defined the genre. It's just endlessly entertaining, but with some self-awareness. And I feel like for both of us, that's really something that hits it home when it's like, you know, it's doing more than just writing a copycat of everything else. And for Virginia, okay, I feel like Virginia and I probably have the most overlap, but for the absolutely different reasons. Like, I will read most things that Virginia recommends, but like for a different reason than why she's recommended them. Like, the uncanny doesn't always do it for me, and I like some high fantasy, but not usually to the detail that Virginia likes. So this is probably one you've already read. It's a classic sci-fi that I think was kind of like forgotten by a female author. It's called A Door into Ocean by Joan Slonczewski. And I'm recommending it with the hopes that maybe I have found a niche that Virginia hasn't read. And I know that Virginia kind of comes from like a strong sci-fi and like high fantasy background, and then is now looking to move out of that into things that are like more, that are doing more, that aren't just like rehashing. So I feel like this was an original and hopefully still holds up. It's about two worlds that are at war. One is more of a colonized world, and the people are like kind of like fish people, and they're only female, and somebody comes from this like colonizing world, and he's actually a boy kind of at the time. The author is maybe a molecular biologist or something, and she brings a lot of that into it, and he sort of becomes one of them and also is going through a gender transition as a result of becoming one of them. So it has some cool, like actual hard science fiction in it. And I would also recommend it to Al because I know that they like sci-fi as well and high fantasy. So I think if you can find a copy, it's actually kind of hard to find, but there is an audiobook out there that I would recommend. Yes. And of course, listen to all of these in audiobook. You know, they will be good. And I've gone on at length. But I just want to say I'm so grateful for this podcast. We started it in the pandemic. And like I said, it has taken me from someone who pretty much exclusively read graphic novels. I still love a good graphic novel, but I've really gone outside of that. I've discovered a deep love of audiobooks, and I have read from so many genres now. And I have gotten to know my book friends so deeply. Like, I've never been one to talk about books, and I think it's hard to find a community to talk about books and to have the opportunity to share that with all of you, like especially my book friends, but also anybody who listens. Corinne's mom, the chance to share this with Corinne's mom is so special. And like I say, has brought me from a, you know, like someone who liked reading to somebody who reads every day and who is like a deep part of my inner life and now my social life as well. And I'm just super grateful for that, and I'm gonna miss it, and I'm gonna listen on Saturdays so that my to be read list continues to grow, because I've also you know, I would say like 50% of the books that I read are books from all of you, and while I can't use them again on the podcast, they have brought me so much happiness and joy. So thank you all so much.
Well, thank you so much, Fiona. Yeah, so this podcast started as a pandemic project, which, you know, was a really difficult time for all of us. And I think I and my other book friends just appreciated the opportunity to kind of talk about something that we loved and talked about something that we are passionate about, and share book recommendations with you. And over the 148 episodes that Fiona has been with, and I actually can't, although Virginia has made a massive spreadsheet of all the books that we have recommended, including the to be anticipated in our top five of the year. So I feel like you've actually recommended to us much more than 148 reads.
reads over the course of this podcast. And it has been a real privilege to kind of watch you evolve as a reader and as a person, as you are growing and like metaphorically expanding your wings and your mind and going on to amazing things. I think we're all honored to be a supporting character in your life's work for that time. And we hope that in this new chapter that you're going on, that you continue to grow and just be the amazing person that you are. We'll miss you terribly. My mom will miss you, but we will miss all those wonderful things about you as a reader and as a person. But we all wish you the very, very best and many, many happy reads in the future. All right. So on behalf of Fiona, 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 and Fiona, we would like to wish the Uber Fiona happy reading. And thank you to all of our listeners and from our book friends. We'll miss you and hope you all the best.
Thank you for listening. If you like our show, please tell a fellow book lover about it. You can find a list of all the books we discussed in our show notes. Join us next week for another fun book chat. Until then, keep it fictional.